Listener warning, everything about this podcast is offensive and often stupid. Live from Bar Dunk. It's the podcast that proves it takes no talent to do a podcast. Guys, Gaines, and Bear!
Yeah!
That's partially true!
And okay, so it also takes a lot of drinking to do a podcast, and we've been drinking for, at least an hour by now.
Yep.
So,
this podcast explains why none of us forgot to go out and get a show beer.
Okay. That explains why we recorded it in reverse and did the last part first.
Yeah, it's bass backwards.
That, too. Tonight was bass. Yeah, and we don't have a show beer tonight, but we're that's okay because we're drinking beer anyways. And oh, by the way, there's an amazing cocktail called a Bennett. If you get a chance, look it up, make it. They are really good. Travis, show them what a Bennett looks like. They are little works.
You put a roofie in your martini.
Oh, that was the secret behind the Bennett.
The roofie.
It's the roofie we put in them. Okay, so Rob, what are we talking about tonight?
We're talking about a video game system that is near and dear to my heart. This is in my top five systems that you should own. And it is NEC's TurboGrafx. Underrated.
Okay, but I'm gonna
hold up the mic.
Yeah, you don't need to hold it because we've got two mics today. I'm gonna bring it up. It was also called the TurboGrafx 16.
Yeah, well, it was generally called the TurboGrafx 16. In England, it was called the TurboGrafx.
Right. And we'll get into that.
Japan, it was called
the PC Engine. We'll get into why that is kind of a misnomer, but not yet.
No engine. No. All right, you ready?
Are we ready?
An air slot.
I'm ready.
Wait, an air slot? Where?
Where's you going to get the turbo? There are no air slots.
It has a supercharger hanging out of the back of it, though. This
yeah.
All right, ready?
It ready.
It was released as a PC Engine in Japan on October 30th of 1987. Here's the thing. 2 years later, it was released in the U.S. as the TurboGrafx on August 29th of 1989 to little fanfare. But it deserved it. This system was created due to a collaboration between Hudson Soft and NEC. Hudson Soft being one of the best damn gaming companies ever made. And NEC being excellent hardware.
Okay, now wait a minute. Here's where the interesting part comes in. It's not that Hudson Soft was developing software for it. What did Hudson Soft develop for
this? Yeah, they developed the chipset for this thing.
So a software company, and a really good software company, developed the chipset for it, which is weird as heck.
Yep, and we're going to go into that a little bit deeper. But yeah, I think that's an interesting fact that needs to be brought out. Yeah, I've been drinking.
Software drives hardware.
That's true, and they did the board. Now Hudson started this because they were collaborating with, they were trying to collaborate with Nintendo, and they actually lost that bid to do Nintendo's graphics. So they decided to go out on their own and make their own system. And
well, this is a story we've heard before.
Yeah, this happens a lot with Nintendo. Yeah,
it really does.
How did Nintendo come into existence? How did PlayStation come into existence?
They have actually invented every system that has ever kicked their ass for any period of time. Nintendo is actually the birth.
Oh, that's kind of true,
and
though.
That is a note. That in Japan, the TurboGrafx totally kicked Famicom's ass once it was released.
Right.
It didn't outsell it, but it outsold it during its lifespan.
Right.
Because the Famicom sold a lot.
And time period. No, the Famicom still exists today. For those who don't remember that the NES in Japan is called the Famicom. So when he says the Famicom in Japan, he means the Nintendo Entertainment System, your classic 8-bit NES.
Exactly. That said, it didn't do as well in the USA, not nearly as well, due to the fact that it was pushed back about 2 years to release in the US, which meant it went into direct competition with Sega's Genesis.
Found some secret.
Is a dead spot to
Darren,
be.
Darren, no!
It's a bad spot. Yeah, that's a badass.
Oh, you just got shit on.
We're going to talk about that, too.
he did!
All right.
Rockstar Band!
The Famicom is a system of firsts. It is a system made of firsts.
You mean the TurboGrafx?
The TurboGrafx, yeah. Sorry.
That was not a system of firsts.
The PC Engine was the first console to feature a CD-ROM drive. It was the first one to do that. It was also the first console to have...
Sega says theirs was.
Yeah, they're liars. They say a lot of shit.
Yeah.
It's also the first console to have a portable version that runs the exact same games as the original console. So their handheld actually ran the exact same games. You could take a game from your console and plug it into your handheld.
Now, that being said, the Japanese version, what was called the PC, I won't even try to pronounce it in Japanese, because it was actually like a Romaji version, was tiny to start with. I mean, it was a really little system.
Yeah, it
was,
you could insert it.
It was a damn near a hand system already. All they had to do was put a screen on it at that point.
Was the screen color? Or was it a liquid crystal? Or what was the portable? I mean,
The portable had an LCD on it.
And it did have an LCD.
A color LCD.
As I recall, yeah. Okay, it was excellent and expensive.
It
was ahead of the Game Boy and even the Sega.
Yeah, the Game Boy's ass.
Yeah.
Game Gear at the time.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
No question. No, the Game Gear couldn't.
But it didn't hold it. But I think they're about the same time period.
Yeah, same time period. What I'm saying is, as far as systems go, it was not.
But what I'm saying, if you have a 16-bit system here and
wait,
or at the very least, a lot of colors and stuff like that.
We're going to get into that.
And you're saying the portable played the exact same game.
Same cartridge.
It had to be somewhat capable.
All right, let's talk about the next first. It was the first game system in the 16-bit era. Unfortunately, it had an 8-bit processor.
Thank you.
Only its graphics chips.
Right.
There were two, by the way.
Right.
By the way, first time SLI, baby.
Yeah, I know.
SLI. All right, not really SLI, but still.
Last time. When we got into, 16-bit, 64-bit, what makes it count? The processor or the graphics?
And I would say the processor makes it count.
I do too.
But the GPU was 16-bit, which gave it a significant advantage over the Famicom, which was its chief rival when it was created.
And was an 8-bit GPU.
And it was a 16-bit GPU.
The Famicom wasn't.
Oh, yeah, no.
Famicom had an 8-bit GPU and an 8-bit processor.
No, it was no
man. This had an 8-bit processor, but a 16-bit GPU. But here comes the crux of it. You can't really call it a 16-bit system. It's processing its graphics at 16-bit, but its bus speed for its processor is an 8-bit processor.
Going extra geeky on this. What are you losing out if your graphics, if you're able to show so many colors and do a certain amount of recovery speed and that
you just have sort of an experience of
a 16-bit system?
No. You just hit it on the money. You said that your recovery time. Your GPU still has to be fed by the CPU. And if the CPU is only sending it out in 8 bits at a time, doesn't matter if the GPU is processing at 16 bits. It's only getting its actual mathematics work at 8 bits per.
That's
Ben,
very true.
Stop your geekiness there. Ben is having geek chasms back there.
But wait, you want more?
There's more?
Yeah. It's the first console to have a multi-tap system, meaning first four-player capability.
Oh, whoa, Travis?
Kind of built in the... It wasn't built in the console.
No, but you could actually get this really sweet... Travis, I'm going to step to the side just a touch. You could get this really sweet... what is this? Five-tap system for it.
Never saw a five-tap game.
Wait!
But you could effectively
pull your gun in the end.
Yeah, future-proofing.
I'm going to sneeze on that one.
Didn't Atari paddles have two paddles per thing, and you plugged the two in, and you could play Warlord four players at a time?
Four players, okay.
You know what? I think that's fair enough to say.
That is fair enough to say. So technically...
All right, fine, four game packs.
The Atari 2600 did allow you up to four players.
Yeah.
No, that's a really good point, because Warlords was a four-player game.
You had to use a paddle.
It was a four-player game.
Fair enough.
With four controllers.
Four paddles, I think that's fair.
No, and that's multi-tap. All right.
I'll throw that one out.
Point well taken.
Larry
for the win. Larry.
That said, four-player Bomber Man was the shit.
Oh, God, yes. So here you go. So now this is the first system that does four-player Bomber Man.
Yep, and that's a badass.
And that is badass.
And finally, I believe it was the first one with a turbo button built into it. Which is like whoa.
Wait a minute. It's got a turbo button built into
it? Yeah, it has a turbo built into it. It has a turbo switch on the top.
Speaking of turbo buttons.
Okay, so does that speed turbo. Up what?
Fire. It's an auto fire button.
Okay, so it's got an auto fire built into it.
Yeah. I couldn't help it.
Built into the stock console is auto fire.
Okay, that's kind of weird, actually.
Crazy people. Yeah, they were
kind of... have to run!
I think they saw him selling, and they were like, let's
have it. They're not the exhaust fan, guys.
All right, controller-wise, it was very much like Nintendo's controller, except, in my opinion, it was much better built. It's a heavier controller. The mush in the controller is just right. It's one of those controllers that really was...
Feels like the clay.
That really has a good feel to it. Number two, very well built. It's a very well built controller. It can take abuse. And believe me, if you're playing JJ and Jeff...
It's not a problem.
Yes. If you're playing JJ and Jeff, you might throw that.
Also, real quickly, Larry said this game was hard, and I have to thoroughly disagree. It's average difficulty.
That's hard.
I've never played it before, and I made it almost to the second level.
Okay,
no, you're just nowhere near it.
But getting
nowhere near the hell.
Getting into the controller, they used a really good ABS plastic on it. It really is. It's basically.
It felt like a football helmet.
Serious. It really is a very well built controller.
So it can take a rage quit.
Yeah, I can take a rage quit.
Don't rage quit.
Hey,
please.
but that being said,
don't be Brian.
Yeah, don't be Brian. So eight bit rage quit.
And it's got rounded corners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which,
so you don't beat your hands up.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So
it's still a square.
But. The overall design's quite nice. Okay, so I also see it's got auto settings on both of the fire one and fire two buttons.
Yeah.
So you actually had auto fire on both of those built in?
Yes, you did. In fact, you had multiple stage.
I see that.
Rapid fire. So you can go slightly fast or really fast, depending on the game.
Did software developers take advantage of that at all?
They didn't really need to.
Hey,
it's kind of a thing that...
If you go on level two...
We're going to make it really hard.
I would not try it with JJ and Jeff, I'm saying, but...
So you can make it really hard for the player because you already know they've got a built-in advantage in the controller.
Yeah. Okay. Try to time things out.
Yeah.
That is a possibility. That might explain.
I wonder if there was something done like that.
The TurboGrafx was a very arcadey machine. It had a lot of arcade ports, so...
What the fuck?
It may have been that it was doing arcade ports and they were
from
really
here.
Hard.
From here.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So...
Okay, wow.
There were a ridiculous amount...
What are you talking about over here?
...of models of the TurboGrafx. Now, we are not going to even talk... About the CD-based systems or the next-generation systems, because there were multiple generations of TurboGrafx. We're going to talk just a TurboGrafx system. 1987, the PC Engine, and Sharp's X1 came out, which is a hybrid computer. It was actually a computer with Hudson Hue Basic in it.
I know. Hudson Soft made their own Basic to boot, okay? This is so, and again, for those of you who don't remember Hudson Soft, they developed some amazing games.
They did a lot of the early Bomberman games.
Right. They did, they just did so much in the early days.
They invented the Hue card? Just saying.
The Hue card.
Yes.
Which is the cartridge that the TurboGrafx use is actually called a Hue card.
It's actually quite nice. It wears well.
Again, the weird thing is that they developed their own hardware, which is just weird as heck. It was a really big software company that did some really big 80s titles and then went out of this. And they actually, I shouldn't say just 80s. They survived through the 90s.
The original Bomberman.
Okay.
Adventure Island. Bonk.
Pretty much all the Bonk games.
There's a billion games they did.
Yeah. But I mean, like, they did all of the original Bomberman games. That's, like, obviously some of the most popular.
Which did make it to this, despite the fact that Nintendo had a lock on games that were made for Nintendo.
Really?
Yeah. They did have a lock, which actually harmed the system a little bit. But not
in general,
in Japan.
Their games are very high quality.
Yeah, they make good games.
Yeah, because it was tough to get Donkey Kong on a TurboGrafx 16.
License-wise, yes. Alright, so 1987, two consoles. 1989, the Core Graphics, the Space Shuttle, which is a downplayed TurboGrafx version. And by the way, the Space Shuttle is pretty much every fake clone looks like the Space Shuttle, because that was kind of a neat looking one. And the TurboGrafx 16,
I'm not
of course,
sure
came
about
out
that.
In 1989.
Yeah, which again was the American version of the PC Engine.
Yep, 1990, Turbo Express. Right. 1991, Core Graphics 2. PC Engine LT, which is the best. It's a luggable TurboGrafx. It has an LCD screen, a lot like what PlayStation did later with
the PSX. Yeah. What do they call it? PS1, right.
I'm trying to get one. If you have one for sale, let me know.
I thought you had one.
And you're not.
No, you want the turbo. You want the turbo, yes.
Yeah. I'm sad to say.
That's a tough one to get.
So if you have one and you're not trying to sell for $1,000, let me know. They try to get a lot for
yeah,
it. I got a CRT that I duct tape on. Suitcase handle to and a TurboGrafx.
It's called a luggable.
Commodore 64.
$700.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
All right, you ready to play the launch title game?
Let's play the launch title game.
Remember that there are 2 years between
the Japanese launch and the American launch.
All right. How many Japanese launch titles, folks?
Six.
17. 3. 9.
Just going over, everybody went over, so I think Larry's going to get it.
Yeah, Larry gets it then.
$2. $1, Bob.
Really? How
two.
Many? Two? Only two?
Bakura, are there any consoles that have only one launch title?
I'm sure there are.
Bakura Man World, which is Wonder Boy, by the way, which is a great launch title. I mean, Wonder Boy and, Wonder Boy and Monster Land was
that
a good game.
And that was a Hudson Soft game.
Yep. And then Shanghai? Really?
Shanghai.
We're going to play some Mahjong.
Stab him in the face.
No, Mahjong.
Yeah, it's a Mahjong game.
Dirty Mahjong?
No, no, regular Mahjong, which is even boring.
Boring.
Boring. I want strip Mahjong.
You're going to play a
I want strip Mahjong.
Monster Land, I'm saying. If you're a Japanese guy, that's why. All right, how about the U.S. 2 years later?
Six.
This is kind of weird, yeah.
Nine.
Damn it. We got 8 because he said 9.
How about it?
0. Only what's bundled with it.
Mm. No. Oh, Tommy, you're dead on.
2 years later.
Hey, you took my number. I only said 8 because he said 9.
Okay, it was Alien Crush, which is really one of the best games for the system.
It's a dating sim.
A great game.
No. Alien Crush.
Oh, no, that would be a great dating sim. China Warrior. Dungeon Explorer, which is really quite good. Keith Courage and Alpha Zones. It was pretty good.
Dungeon Explorer is what kind of game?
It's an adventure game.
So it's got a chip in it, and you save game, and because we were starting.
I can
no, I don't think so.
I cannot remember if you
could. No,
save
I don't.
I know you could save codes. Some games on these.
Was
but...
it using codes like the?
No, I don't even think they used. I think it was a dungeon crawler. I think it was a dungeon crawler.
It was a dungeon crawler. It was
right. I think it's a crawler. I don't think it had any
good.
Options.
It's a good looking game.
Yeah.
I can play it. But I'm
well,
not...
we will look into that. If there's any corrections, we'll make
it. So it's more of a rogue game.
I'm pretty sure it's like rogue game. Yes.
Rogue life.
No, no, no. It was rogue. It was rogue. It was. Let's not go into this now.
Like rogue-ish. Rogue-ish.
Where's your drawing so we need them?
Yeah. Yeah, really. So we can. Yes.
We had your power
if
golf.
You're confused. Go back a couple
of course you have golf. It's an American game.
Yes. Our type. Hell yeah.
Oh, God.
Nice.
As a launch title?
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty fucking awesome.
But it keeps getting better. Legendary Axe.
Legendary Ass was the best.
I got a legendary ass, actually.
Yes.
Well, the camera just saw that, so yes, he does.
Yeah, I keep forgetting we're on camera.
We are on camera now.
Yeah, for like a year.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. No, like 2 years, but it's okay.
Victory Run, which is quite good, as I recall. And Vigilante. That was big.
Wasn't that like what I'm trying to think of.
So wait. Are you telling me that what was like their iconic game was not a launch title?
No, it was not. No bonk.
Yeah. I mean that was they were trying to have an iconic
right.
Sonic.
Well,
Mario.
And funny enough,
so Big Headed Baby was on the way.
Bonk would have been the character to have. I mean, Bonk really was. It was a Hudson Soft big hit. I mean, big hit for them. It sold a bitch load as a game. So
That was their thing. All right. So here we go. More of the numbers game.
So I like big headed characters.
Japanese.
I'm gonna split this because I don't. It's only fair to split this up. All right.
All right.
Total hue card games.
Hue card games. I'm gonna say yeah. 56.
Ben.
55.
Claire.
72.
I would go with about 95. So far off, you guys should be sickened.
That much?
297. You should
holy
have known by
shit,
the cartridge.
Shit.
Wow, they had a lot of big library.
How about when it came to the U.S.?
12.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm going to give that one. 94 in the U.S. for release.
Oh, see, I was right.
Yeah, but that said, yeah. Get
very popular overseas, yeah.
All right, let's go CD. What the
hell? Who wants 100
this is
Mahjong
wild.
Games?
To see, all right. How many Mahjong games?
Exactly. Yeah, Mahjong games don't count.
Strippers, yeah.
All right, CD-based games.
Considering it was so early, like, we're talking about Japan or international.
Yeah, Japan. Let's start with Japan.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna say because it was so early on, it's gonna be lower. So let's go with probably like 87.
You know, 63.
I don't think the CDs took off at all.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Right. So I'm gonna go more like 30.
I'll go 50.
You're about to be dumbfounded. 417.
Holy crap! Really?
Yeah,
I believe they received some shovelware.
No, but it doesn't matter. CDs were really expensive at that time. You were not making shovelware.
I want to throw out early 90s.
No, yeah. I mean, you were getting shovelware. I'm really expensive media.
I've seen a couple.
Okay.
No, there are some really good CD-based games for it. But
that's amazing. All right,
how about the U.S.?
12.
28. I'm back to 24.
15.
Yeah, we're pathetic. 45 in the U.S.
I did not expect the library to be as big as it is.
That's amazing.
Just wait. When did AOL start sending me CDs in the mail?
It was actually old TurboGrafx CDs.
Yeah, that's what it was. Rewritten.
All right. Hey, interesting fact. I could not get an actual legitimate number on how many TG-16s or PC Engines sold in Japan. I could not get a steady number for it.
Yeah.
There's no good number. I do have a fairly possible number for the U.S.
2.5, right?
God damn, you're good.
No, I looked it up. Oh, it's okay. Not good. I just looked it up.
2.5?
Yeah, it's about 2.5.
Which is actually not bad.
No, it's 2.5, guys. It's not 2.5.
Oh, yeah, it's all 2.5 units.
No.
Three of them were to me.
2.5 million units here in the U.S. actually surprised me. I didn't think it sold that good in the U.S.
Yeah. I bought one towards the end when I got it.
I didn't.
In fact, I got it with your brother, Jim.
Oh, okay, all right.
We ran out to Toys R Us, and they had a big old clearance on it.
Yeah, I just don't remember.
I swore that was a KB Toys purchase.
It would be a
KB Toys. Did it have a pretty good retail presence?
No.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I used to buy my games at Toys R Us all the time.
Yeah, Toys R Us and maybe KB Toys. No place else carried it.
Target did.
I'm sure Target did.
Yeah, Target
did. You worked at Target. They did not.
Yeah, they did. I used to buy them there.
I don't ever remember Target.
They had a presence. I mean, they were okay. They just didn't have... it's like SNES, and then Genesis, and then TurboGrafx. I remember that hunt. And it was on clearance, though, which was really kind of nice.
But every time you bought a game, you had to go, yeah, this is the last one.
Yeah.
The last one.
All right.
Okay, so...
Yeah.
Speaking of buying games, I see you're running an EverDrive in there.
Yeah, that is the Turbo EverDrive.
There is, Chris makes an EverDrive for the TurboGrafx, which is fucking awesome!
And it's the only power light you'll ever get on your TurboGrafx 16, because they did not have a power light.
Oh wait, it's
not on right now, is it? Because it's not loading.
No, but it lights up. It's a little sticker.
Yep.
Yeah, that's orange.
Yeah, there is the orange sticker. Also, attached to the back of the unit is something called the...
It's a sticker, dude.
It's something called the Turbo Booster. It really is a sticker.
What the?
It's kind of funny considering the quality construction of the unit. Hey. And then they put that sticker on there. It's like...
You can have LED power lights, or you can have 16-bit graphic chip.
I guess. All right, attached to the back of this... Yeah, I guess. Attached to the back is something called the Turbo Booster, which was actually a pretty neat little thing. What that did is allowed you to put out composite output for it, which was actually kind of unusual in America at that time. Here's the thing. I can actually emulate that particular giant unit with a $5 cable. I've done it.
Really?
Actually, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. You can actually just...
No.
Oh yeah, you could have at the
time.
Sure. Oh no, they didn't.
I'm gonna say that you.
No, you could just, but you could take a couple of stereo cables and you could, clamp some ends to them, and you could just hook them up to three pins in the back, and you'd be.
And
set.
You were good.
Yeah, you were ready to go.
So you could do it at the time, not having to buy their expansion.
You could have, if you could have got that kind of knowledge without the internet, which made it a lot harder to do. You'd need a pinup. But yeah, nowadays, honestly, that's about $100 unit on the back of it. I got it cheaper, but yeah, it's expensive. I like it because it looks nice, but yeah, don't buy it unless you're really serious about collecting.
Just an add-on?
Just spend $5. Yes. Yeah, it used to have a cover on the back, which is very often missing on them. I do have money, okay? I didn't wreck it, people.
Don't be a fool, right. Grab your tool.
But that cover's great for putting a hole in and running that little stereo cable. I'm just saying. It's really great for running those too. Okay, so it's time for the Spectate.
All right.
Here we go.
Okay, here's where it gets kind of weird. Again, it was called the TurboGrafx-16.
Yes. The CPU is a Hudson Soft QC8280, 8-bit microprocessor. Running at a maximum, this is the interesting part. It ran at 7.16 megahertz, which is actually pretty
really high for that time.
Thank you. There's no Porsche about that time for 8-bit processors.
And you are right, Travis. That was an excellent comment. It ran hot.
Yeah.
Therefore, games could switch it down to 3.58 megahertz or 1.7.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. And most Hue cards games ran at the 3.58 megahertz level. Good catch, Travis.
Wow, yeah.
Smart fella.
Your nerd balls are huge.
They are.
Man, that's good.
And
our
show
right
now. And
they're nice. Throb.
The GPU. Two 16-bit GPUs, though, to try and make up for that. Well, actually, that's a pretty good processor.
For the time, that was not a bad processor.
Yeah, that's not too bad. Boy, I didn't even know it ran that fast. I wrote it down, and then I thought, And then I thought, man, that's really fast.
Yeah, yeah.
That'll smoke a Commodore 64. Anyway. Oh, yeah. All right, so...
That was fair. Right now, the Amiga was out, but...
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, there's a problem. But, it has 8 kilobytes. 8 of main random access memory, 64K of video RAM. Boy, they were putting all their eggs in one basket.
Yeah, right?
I think it shows.
Yeah.
They're pretty games. I'm not going to lie.
And that's not even like one of the better
ones. Yeah.
There were better ones.
Yeah, 64 total sprites on the screen. That's pretty good. Theoretically, it could run 512 total colors, but the sprite layer and the background layer were split. And each one could do 241 at once. So there are 512 total, but the background layer and the sprite layer could each do 241, which that's actually quite a bit.
Seems like a lot to me.
Yeah, it's a lot of colors. It only has one controller port.
You need colors, right? Because you need colors. This.
Yeah. It only has one port.
So you're going to need that multi-tap.
You are almost going to need a multi-tap, which is, you know, it's kind of strange because multi-taps, they're not hard to come by, but they're not exactly, like, real easy to come by.
You can definitely find them.
You think it'd be almost a one-to-one.
Right, exactly. But it was not a one-to-one. They're a little bit harder to get this year. They're not, you can get one if you want one. But if you want to get one at a decent price, you're going to wait a little while. Or you can go to our lovely local video game shop.
The Goat Store New Wave Video. I would say go to the Goat Store because they're awesome and have great prices on their TurboGrafx stuff.
I love Dan's balls.
His nerd balls are showing again.
His nerd balls are so good.
I would mention that the hardware is amazingly solidly built. It is a very well built system. The controllers, which is very important for the time and unusual. In a time of very crappy controllers and very creaky, junky controllers, the TurboGrafx controller is badass built. It has a cable that is thick, but it's very thick. It's a very thick controller cable.
I will tell you though, I feel like at this point, by the time you get an 89 release, two buttons is not going to be enough.
Yeah, so they made a 6-button version.
They were thinking.
Nerd!
But that was because they were in competition at that point. So when they came out, they thought their competition was going to be the NES. They really built, if you look at the way they built that controller, you can see, it was designed to compete with the NES. Yes. But then when they came out, all of a sudden now it was the
Super Nintendo, the Genesis, right. With the 6 buttons.
Exactly,
all
the 6-button controllers came out. So they released a second controller that had the 6 buttons.
Yep.
I mean, I do have to say, the technology behind the hardware of this is very interesting. Because you started with a fairly basic... I mean, it was powerful for its time. Fairly basic, but then you add on things like composite video, this multi-tap, different controllers. I mean, the fact that it runs CDs, like... It seemed like it really grew over its console lifespan.
The round socket approach, I think, is
okay.
Nice.
Also, if you look at that, that comes in later when you get into the GameCube and
the Dreamcast,
the 64,
the N64,
or more likely the Commodore 64's serial ports. But anyway,
yeah, but again, but for controllers, everybody else was doing 9-pin. And these guys did not go the 9-pin route, which is very unusual for the time. Or custom ports, like you had on the NES. So, this is very interesting as far as what they did for their controllers. They are using a standard.
Yeah, it's a standard.
Yeah, they're not doing anything odd about it.
Viewed them on a lot of computers at
the time. Exactly. Yes. So, but it was not common for a controller.
For a console controller.
No, it's a real standard, I forget what they call the round connectors like that again, damn.
Back to Plus 9.
Why do they call it a pin, but...
Not that kind of round connector.
Oh, not a nerd's
saying. It looks to me like there's probably more expense in making that kind of connection than a 9-pin.
Than a D9, yes. Yeah. A D9 was much cheaper than that connector.
Alright, so let's talk best bets. And here's something about the TurboGrafx, the games. This is a best-of-breed collector system because of the games. It has excellent games. In fact, I have a huge list right here that is just a nothing list.
I'm going to bring up one
game. So I think we're going to bring up our favorite game, and then I'm going to go with that. And this, guys, is incomplete by a large margin.
Okay.
There's games that I'm thinking of right now that I'd be going on forever. It is a great system. All right, here we go.
Go ahead. You start it.
Larry, you got a game?
I'm a Bonk guy. I like Bonk.
Yeah, you're playing it at Christmas.
No, he took me on that one because I was going to say that.
Bonk was a
great game. A good, solid, early platformer game.
Yes. Yes, I went to Christmas at the Benson House, and what did I do? I sat in the corner and played TurboGrafx.
Yes.
Yes, he did. I'm glad I brought that system up.
No, so am I. So, yeah. So, no, I'm with you on that. I will go with Bonk as well.
Actually, you can probably hold that to Benson.
Yes. Yes. Hold your shaft to my lips, and let me suckle on the tip. I gotta say, I never played anything on the TurboGrafx, but because it's Hudson Soft, it's gotta be Bomberman. And I don't... That is a solid game.
It's the best
Bomberman's the best. It's a four-player game, and it felt like
actually
the best couch kill everything.
Fun fact, Bomberman for the Sega Saturn, you can use 2 multi-taps to do up to 10 players.
Yeah. Nice. Holy ball sack!
Yeah. Hey, we should have put that in the Saturn episode.
Also, in Sega Saturn, they also have a really cool Bomberman multi-tap, which looks really cool, like Bomberman said.
It's designed for the game.
Yeah.
So, alright, so...
That's hyper-specific, and that's how great the game is. They developed a peripheral only for that... Well, not only, but specifically designed for that game.
No, it's only for that game. That's the only game that uses it on the
Saturn. But not 10.
You guys developed something as a software developer... So hardcore that hardware guys were like, we need to make this so that this makes more monies for us.
That's Hudson Soft. Okay, that's but awesome. I have to agree with you. That would have been
that is awesome.
But I like Bonk because...
Okay, I never heard of Bonk.
I had no friends, so I had to play by myself. So, all right, so Travis.
Again, yeah, Bomberman is a long-lasting series I really love and enjoy, and you got to start on TurboGrafx, but another one is Devil's Crush, which is a really, really bizarre pinball game. It's really good, and the graphics were like super awesome for its time, for sure.
It was actually my second choice for putting up on the
screen. Yeah, it's a really damn good pinball game.
All right, Rob, you get to... Okay, so right. We technically have 2 Bomberman, 2 Bonk, and yours.
I got a list from hell.
Well, go with your favorite. Give me your favorite.
All right, my number one is going to be one that I played with Darlene a whole lot, which was Parasol Stars, which is...
Oh, damn!
It was available only on the Amiga, other than the TurboGrafx.
Correct,
16.
It was on the Amiga, yes. And that's where I played that game.
Is that how you landed her as a wife?
I gave her the Parasol Star.
No, kind of Bubble Bobble-ish, but you kind of like...
No, it is a Bubble Bobble sequel. Yeah. It's an actual Bubble Bobble sequel.
It's really good. Part of it. It's amazing.
Yeah, no dinosaurs, though.
Fucking cool.
They were kids at that point.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, they were
Parasol
kids.
Parasol Star's really good.
Give it a try.
Yeah, you really should find a copy of that.
I finished it several times.
Nice.
It's a great game.
Good call.
All right, let's go through it. JJ and Jeff, which is on screen right now,
AKA, go around and kick everything on the screen.
Yes.
You see a bush, you kick it. Shit comes up. Trash can, you kick it. There's a bathroom door, you kick it open. Legitimately.
Fences, you kick it, yes.
Yeah, I legitimately kicked a bathroom door open and went to heaven. It was weird.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was weird.
And that told you one of the weird secrets. A lot of hidden stuff. A lot of, if you don't kick this random invisible spot, this platform isn't going to show up, and you're just always going to die.
But they do give you a hint. They say kick the stump.
Stump
in the bathroom. Yeah, but in the bathroom after you go to heaven. Why am I in heaven? I thought I was just going to get handy, dude.
That guy was obviously masturbating by the post.
Obviously masturbation.
All right. Yeah, I mentioned all the Crush games. The two Crush games. Airzok, one of the best shooters in history.
He talked about it in a Bill Hill episode,
A couple times. Yeah, I put any bot game. Splatterhouse, which is, like, one of its remarkable games. Almost everybody that has a TurboGrafx has...
Was that originally on the TurboGrafx, or...?
It was originally an arcade game.
Okay.
And it was a horror-based beat-em-up with zombies, basically.
Okay. Horror-based? Played a Jason-esque character and punched the living crap out of stuff.
What? Wouldn't you shit? Ninja Spirit, side-scrolling.
Oh, yeah. No. That's a good game. That was also an arcade game.
Yep, R-Type.
Yeah.
Superstar Soldier.
Would you say that they're a really high platformer game? Platformer?
Side scroll.
Yeah, side scroll platformer.
But maybe it's I think
more platform.
Shooters, actually, it's known for its shooters. It's really. Cool. That is like its thing, but yeah, it can be platformers.
It had a lot of platformers.
This is kind of my list, so.
But that's Hudson Soft. They did a lot of platform games.
Two. Superstar Soldier. I think I mentioned. Military Madness, which is a tactical combat game on the moon. So it's a really early tactical combat game. It's quite good. If I wouldn't have mentioned it, I would have got hate mail. Newtopia, which is a Zelda-like. Here we go. Castlevania. Rondo of Blood, known as one of the best Castlevania games of all time.
Castlevania?
Yeah.
Can I save here? Or is it an action?
You know, I can't remember all these.
I love my Castlevanias as an RPG.
It's a semi-RPG.
Go back to the Zelda-esque one.
Yeah, Newtopia?
Yeah, is that one got a save to it? Did they do any saves?
I see a lot of codes in your future.
anyway, that's why I never played RPGs on the Sega Genesis, because at that point, almost everything was a code. And I hated it.
No. You are wrong, Larry, because that is two games in one. Because you were never the little brother that had to sit there and just, I don't get to play this game, and I can't fuck up their saves or figure out their codes. I'm just going to sit there and play code game until I figure something out. That is a fun game.
You had a lot of time on your hands.
I had so much time at, you know, whenever they were asleep and I could actually play the games.
Well, that sounds unfortunate for you.
But it was I actually really like the codes. Because if you figure one out, it's you ridiculous. Feel like a genius. Of like, I cracked this myself. I'm a cryptographer.
Two more, we got Magical Chase, which I'd also get yelled at if I didn't mention. Good side-scrolling shooter. Just a great shooter. And finally, Strider. Which also, if I didn't mention, which is a great game. By the way, these are great games. When I say if I didn't mention, I get crap. It's because they're good games. They're actually good games.
Yeah.
I feel like you might know this. What's their most predominant but yet failure licensed title game? So they're E.T.
I don't think TurboGrafx bought any titles like that. Hudson Soft is not known for doing title games.
Because Nintendo did stuff like that. Friday 13th, stuff like that, you know.
Honestly, on the TurboGrafx, I can't think of any where they bought the licensing, like a 007 or the E.T.
That bought Star Trek.
Yeah, right. But their Star Trek wasn't
there. The game is okay, but it became an epic fail for them because they spent too much money on it and all that.
And this E.T. was
I cannot think of anything on the TurboGrafx. I can't think of any licensing that they bought. I don't think they had any licensed game. Travis, you remember any?
I was too young.
Yeah, no, I honestly... No, they really
you
didn't.
Like licensed off of a movie?
Movie or TV or anything. Maybe on the CD. With 400, with 400 titles, probably.
And it was basically like, oh, here's this title. We're going to really make it with this title. And it turns out Knight Rider's not going to do it for you.
Knight Rider doesn't do anything for us.
All right.
All right. So, Rob.
So, before we go on to break and we talk to the folks at GameHoleCon, I would like to sum up our TurboGrafx section of the show by saying that, in my opinion, the TurboGrafx is one of the best systems of all time. It is a great system. It's highly underrated. Hardcore gamers, you should pick this one up. It has just got great games. And I think that's what a console is about.
Yeah, see, so with all my systems, I do not own one yet, but here's two things that are going to... I know. So here's two things that are going to make me buy it. One, it's got great games, and two, it's got an EverDrive for it.
Yeah.
And I love systems that have EverDrives for it. Shame how?
Shame you for not having it right now.
I will get one in the not-too-distant future here. So all right.
We love the TurboGrafx, and you should too.
Exactly.
As much as possible.
So we're going to take a break?
Yep, and right after this, we are going to have GameHoleCon.
Nice. Stick around for GameHoleCon. It's going to be a good interview.
Woo!
Woo!
And we're back, and I'm with
Alex Kammer from GameHoleCon. What's up, guys?
Hey! And we're going to talk a bit about GameHoleCon, which we're going to be going to very soon.
Yeah, very soon. We are really stoked about this one, guys. This is going to be amazing. So, I'm going to start the first question for you, Alex. GameHoleCon? Okay.
Yeah.
They get that question plenty of times.
I know they get that question plenty of times, but I have to ask it anyway.
It's an interesting story.
It is an interesting story. So, how did you come up with the name GameHoleCon?
Yeah. We didn't exactly run it past the greatest marketing minds in the industry, let's put it that way. Where it came from is because it's a gaming group here in Madison, Wisconsin, and we ran it for years out of my basement. It was a subterranean gaming lair. We had a lot of fun down there, and sort of an homage to The Hobbit, we called it a hole, game hole, because that's what we did. And, it sort of sounded a little naughty too, so we thought that was funny. And, that's it. So now it's actually located above a bar instead, so it's not even really a game hole anymore. It's a game loft, I guess, technically. We've called our group the Game Hole ever since. We've been together for about 15 years, and that's where the name came from.
Nice.
Okay, very cool, very cool. So,
for our viewers who may not know, again, Game Hole Con is a giant tabletop pen and paper LARP board game convention over the span of 3 days in Madison, Wisconsin.
I was going to ask him this, but okay, so Larry, go ahead.
Well, this is what year?
This is year three. Year three.
Okay, and that being said, year three, you guys have already outgrown your old space and have moved to a new space this year.
Yeah, man, it's pretty ridiculous. It's we were planning on optimistically moving to a bigger venue from the Madison Sheridan after 3 years, maybe four. But it became immediately apparent last year that we needed to move. Our attendance has been growing, 40% every year. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Which is great. So, and this year we've had to actually establish a formal volunteers program because we just can't handle it ourselves. So it's good.
It's really crazy. I mean, like last year, I mean, we were all there doing interviews and playing games and stuff. The games library was always packed. And I wanted to find some other open game space. We just like overtook the bar at the hotel. It was pretty crazy. It was a lot of people, and we got to try a lot of different stuff. I know for sure last year.
What area did we take last year?
Yeah, go ahead.
Huh?
Whose area did we take last year?
Last year when we recorded,
wasn't it? We took the magic.
We recorded a show in the magic area. We recorded in the game library. We recorded out front, and we recorded in the bar.
Okay, we kind of recorded all over your show. It won't be the first or last time we record all over somebody's show. So, but it was a lot of
kind of like a dog peeing to bark things.
Yeah, we kind of bark things.
Do you have a free game library this year?
Oh yeah. It's got a bigger space. It's the Gen Con Games Library again. It's got a huge-ass space. One of the big things, we didn't have enough open gaming, so we've got an absolute shitload of open gaming this year. There'll be a sea of it. There'll be upstairs and downstairs, conveniently located to both bars. It should be great.
See,
should be great.
I love the fact you said conveniently located to both bars. That just made it for us, okay? As soon as we know we can game and get a drink and game and get a drink and game and get a drink, we are good to go.
Exactly, exactly. Same wavelength, man.
So, obviously, I mean, you guys started as a gaming group yourself, and it evidently shows in the con. Like, it is a con by the gamers for the gamers, and there's nothing but a great community behind it. I've seen a lot of just people who love to play board games and people who love to play tabletop. And it's just very different than other cons. I mean, was this something you kind of had in mind when you were creating the con yourself, or just something that kind of ended up happening as you kind of went along?
No, it's worked out remarkably well, considering that was our plan. I mean, we're all tabletop guys, board games, miniatures games, and RPGs, and you know, we didn't want to have you know, a lot of, you know, foam fighting stuff and all that kind of stuff. We'll leave that to other cons, and that's, you know, great. Ours is a tabletop gaming convention, and we wanted to bring something to town that would, and also the whole region, that would effectively, we hoped, replace Gen Con when it came to high quality gaming, and attract the best guests and have the best games and have great attendees. So that's worked out amazingly well so far.
So you're not going to treason out on us?
We're still a little bitter about the whole Gen Con thing.
I hope not. No, no, man. See, none of us are doing this for a living. There's nothing corporate about us. We all have jobs, and this is all just fun. This is a passion project for us, and we just love gaming, and we love to hang out with other gamers and have a good time, and that's what this is all about.
And I gotta say, so, I'm old school, and Larry's old school. We literally remember Gen Con as a Parkside type old school. So,
oh, yeah, nice.
So, when you say this, that was the one thing that we absolutely loved about your con last year. It felt like those original days of Gen Con, where everybody was doing it because they were so passionate about it. Not all these corporate booths, not all that crap that you deal with like that. It was just good old school gaming. Really had a nice feel.
I thought I saw yeah, some gaming in the hallways.
There was gaming in the hallways. And that, see, that's it. You guys, and that's it. You were really cool about that. People could set up and play anywhere, and that makes a big difference. Unlike the corporate events.
As long as they weren't being, you know...
Well, yeah, I mean...
Interruptive or, you know, being... Yeah, but there's probably like
that.
Say it. I was trying to hold my...
Okay, as long as you're not being like Drunken Larry, yeah. You're okay. You laugh now.
So
wait, we're going to be there this November. You laugh now.
So obviously, besides the more space this year, I mean, is there any new events you guys are planning on trying to do and stepping up this year with the new area?
Yeah. Gosh, everything is bigger. You know, the dealer hall is bigger. The open gaming area is bigger. We have a seminar track that is focusing on game design. It's called CrafterCon. It's a con within a con. So it's all people who want to learn how to publish their own games can sit through this seminar track. We have games going on in the area hotels because we have so much stuff going on. Our game space is full. We have, for instance, on Friday night, there is a murder mystery dinner being put on by a troupe. It's called Star Trek versus Star Wars, and they're selling tickets to that, and that's at the Sheridan. There are some really cool LARPs, Call of Cthulhu LARPs, going on at the Clarion Hotel in their boardrooms. So yeah, it's just all but more. Like, it's hard to even.
Constantly, your guys' Facebook stream is always just like, oh yeah, we got this new event and everything's filling up, and it's like, it's just crazy to see your guys' social media stream up with all these crazy new events. So it's just been like a lot to keep track. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, we are really hyped.
New Bet wants to know how much it is to get in.
For the murder mystery
Star Trek one. Is that
sold out?
I'm gonna bet it's sold out, I'll bet you.
It's not actually. It's $35 and it's a 3-course dinner and a 2-hour show.
New Bet is there. So
those are my prices, sir.
Now, Mike, you have to come.
Can we make a weekend, please?
if the lady wants to go, the guy's gonna go.
Exactly.
It's a Star Wars murder mystery.
Star Wars versus Star Trek. It could not be better. You are right. That really does sound brilliant.
Shit. I just want to film.
Okay, so the that shit out of Mike's mouth was, yes, they're going.
Nice, yeah.
So yeah,
It sold really well, but there still are some tickets left. I think it's 80 max. I think we have it set, 80 total. So I think there are 20 some tickets left when I looked this afternoon.
Can we reserve some now?
Yeah. As soon as the show is over, we will get you guys online and go. All right, so like you said, this is only your third year, and you've been doing 40% growth every year. I mean,
there's a lot of logistics to that.
There's got to be, and like you said, this is not your day job. So how do you guys survive doing this?
Yeah, it's planning. I mean, you know, we're not waiting for the last second on stuff. You know, I've been talking to vendors for a long time as far as getting badges printed the right way, lanyards. I mean, it just takes some planning, and if you can do that, then you can manage it. And other than that, it's evenings, stealing time at work, usual stuff. I was rocking our op here in my office, printing regens for the D&D, for the Adventure League D&D area. I'm trying to print some like 500 pre-generated characters thing. Just get them done and get it behind me, you know, just a checklist and knocking stuff off one day after another.
Okay, so wait, you said you needed 500 pre-generated characters?
Yeah, dude, we've sold something, we're approaching 1,000 D&D Adventure League tickets sold.
Holy shit!
That's crazy, man.
That is absolutely insane.
Just
wow.
One thing is, that is...
Yeah,
Dungeon Masters is that?
Yeah, well, so wait a minute. How? Yeah, that's a good point. Ask the question.
How many DMs is that?
We have about 30 for just D&D AL.
For 1,000 people, Jesus.
That is
Christ.
Going to be amazing just to watch.
Shifts,
okay,
yeah,
so
it's
going
to be a long day.
Yeah, they're working hard, man. They're going to be running games all day.
Okay, so before we get too far along, I want you to go, this is my job on the show, it's the one thing I do. I want to give your website for GameholeCon.
Please.
No, you give it.
Oh, I give it. It's GameholeCon.com. GameholeCon.com. That's
okay.
It, my man.
And I gotta say, you guys have got a great website. I don't know who did your web development, they did a really nice job.
It's one of the guys, you know, that's the thing. You asked about how this all came to be. We're sitting around my gaming table, and we're just looking at each other, and we had a great group of people that had different skill sets. You know, we've almost had to hire nothing outside, which is great. We've saved a lot of money.
Awesome.
We didn't design our own site. We've got an accountant. You know, it's awesome. So it's worked out that way. Thank
you guys have a lawyer?
No. It's been like that since the first... Yeah, they're all lawyers, I think. It's been like that since the first year. You guys have had really just top-notch social presence.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's very
that makes
easy
a big
to find
difference.
Information.
Exactly.
About, yeah.
If I look you up on any device, mobile, tablet, whatever, if I type it in, it comes up with you guys right.
And with a name like that, it's hard to miss. Come on.
No, but no, it could have taken you to a porn site. Let's be honest. I'm just gonna put it out there. It could have gone to a porn site.
Yeah, my browsing started for Game Over.
yeah, it doesn't end well.
And all of a sudden, it just got really interesting.
Right. So, again, you guys have got that all going for you. You've got a lot. What about next year now?
Wow, next year. Well, it's already in the works, man. We have our date set. It's November 4 through 6, 2016. I already have 8 confirmations from new guests for next year. You know, we've got contracts all signed. We actually have our 2017 dates set as well. So yeah, we got to keep planning and keep rolling.
You do. Okay, so. Okay, let me go ahead.
You know, I think I have a guess on this, but how has Madison been to work with as far as reception and politicians and changing the rules on you or any of that kind of stuff we've heard from some
other,
of our
other cons we go to?
Yeah,
it hasn't been bad. You know, the city itself is cool with anything that makes money to the city, you know, brings money in. So we're selling out hotels, and they're excited about that, you know, for the obvious reason. We are not doing anything outside of our conference centers anyway, so they don't really, even though they don't understand it really, they don't get it, especially not our name, you know, they don't know what the hell that's all about. But as long as we're not interfering with anyone else, they seem to be cool with it. And the Madison gaming community is slowly coming around. You know, we our numbers are so big because we draw heavily from Chicago and Minneapolis and Milwaukee and those areas. And Madison has been coming along too. We have a great gaming culture here, but they're very inclusive. And so now we're seeing more Madison addresses showing up in our pre-registrations, which is great.
Nice. Okay, I want you to go ahead and one more time give the name of the event, the dates of the event this year, because I know you still have open tickets available. So, again, for our listeners,
that's right.
It is?
It's GameholeCon.com. GameholeCon.com, November 6th through 8th in Madison, Wisconsin, in the Alliant Energy Center. Pre-registration closes on October 15th. After that date, tickets, badge costs go up. Our free soda, the refill soda cups go up. A few other merchandise things go up. So you should pre-register. That's the way to be. And then when you show up, you pick up your packet, you get your shit, and you're off. You don't have to fill out forms and get a badge and then figure out what games you want to play. You pick up your packet, it's got your badge in it, it's got a schedule, it's got a program, you know where to go, and you head off and start playing games. You don't have to screw around a registration. So pre-register if you're thinking about coming. That's definitely the way to go.
Agreed. So people, if you get a chance, pre-register. You'll see the show before that, so go to thegamehole.com.
Gamehole.com.
Right, and pre-register. Also, if you don't pre-register, like he said, there's going to be a bunch of open games anyways. So feel free to come to the door, buy tickets, and go. Again, you cannot believe how good of a con this is. And we've been to a ton of cons. This one's amazing.
You know, one of the things I read about early on, or Travis actually pointed out, is that you had something like an independent gaming contest that was going on, or an opportunity to display games. How well did that go? Did you get a lot of involvement with people, or?
We had a ton, man. We ran several things. We first of all feature a lot of local designers. We have 700 people locally in the South Central Wisconsin area that have great games, and they're running their games. But then we also had a board game design contest and an RPG design contest, and we now know who those winners are. We don't know on the board game yet, but the RPG design winner has been selected. We had guys like Alan Hammack and Chris Perkins and Chris Clark judge that, so, you know, big time names in RPGs. And then as far as the board games, God, I think they had something like 50 to 60 entrants for the board game contest. So they're down to their final four, I believe. So that's gone real well. It's a cash prize, a real cool medal trophy that they win, and other goodies. So it went really well for the year one. I think it's going to do nothing but grow.
So just out of curiosity, how did the mechanics of the judging go? Do you basically doing a lot of play testing and then going, this one plays pretty well, this one, you know, kind of,
Well, if for an RPG, what we do is we send each judge a score sheet, you know, for creativity, logic, you know, does it make sense, does it play well, and so on. They give a 1 through 10 number designation. You add up those numbers, and they get a total score. And so you add, I think there were three judges, whoever had the highest score for their module, their RPG adventure, won, and that's how it went.
Cool. Very cool. Yep. All right, so we're going to start wrapping this up one more time. For people who want to pre-register, go to you.
GameholeCon.com.
All right.
Awesome.
All right.
Can I do one last thing?
One last quick question.
I did notice you have a band on Saturday night.
Oh yes. Something. So when you think of a stage that we'll be having live music all weekend, one of those bands is Lords of the Trident, who are coming in on Saturday night to play a set, and that's going to be awesome. They're cool guys, and hey man, we have drinks, we have bars, we have heavy metal, and we have lots of gaming. I don't know, man, that's for us, that's about as good as it gets, so we're pretty excited about that.
We are actually going to interview Lords of the Trident about gaming and about being at GameholeCon this weekend as well, and they'll be on the show after your show. So,
Sweet.
Good lead in, Larry. We gotta pump the group a little bit too. All right. So, take us out, Rob.
All right. Well, thank you very much for watching Guys, Games, and Beer yet again. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed making it. You can visit us at www.guysgamesandbeer.net. Watching me.
He's watching you.
Also, if you got any questions, email. I'm drunk at guysgamesandbeer.net. Check us out on Facebook for free games. Yes, we do give away free games, and we have contests all the time, and all sorts of goofing around. We're on there constantly, www.facebook.com/guysgamesandbeer. And if you're one of those Twitterers who tweets, check us out at guysgamesandbeer, because, you know,
fans are overrated.
Fans are overrated. They hate the word games, apparently, on Twitter. All right. Thank you very much for watching, guys. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Like,